On this episode of the iFilmmaker podcast, Mr. Danny Gervitz joins us to discuss his career as a filmmaker and DP and his career in YouTubing. Danny has been full go 100% in both and has been very relatively successful. He shares how he was able to get 60,000 new subscribers in a matter of just a few months, which is impressive, and how this recent success has now made him question what he's going to start putting 100% effort in moving forward. Is he going to continue to do his freelance work full time and continue to keep YouTube on the side as a side hustle? Or is he thinking there needs to be a change now? This is going to be a very interesting conversation. This was a very fun time that I had with Danny. We talked for a very, very long time. And I'm not going to take too much time on this intro just because I want to get to the conversation faster. So thank you guys for joining us, and make sure you're following us over on Facebook and on Instagram at iFilmmaker Podcast. But let's just get right into it. Here is Danny Gervitz. Danny Gervitz, yeah, thanks for coming it. On
yeah,
the iFilmmaker Podcast, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a very special moment for the two of us.
That's awesome. Yeah, dude, I've been loving your work. I've been following you on YouTube mainly, and I got a glance at your work online, and I couldn't just watch one because it was just that good. I'm like, wow. Fantastic stuff that you're putting on, and I wanted to kind of discuss that. You know, I love to talk to people that are more talented than I am so that I can sort of dive in, and really this podcast is really me also learning myself, not just putting stuff out there that I think people want to hear, you know?
Yeah, so, I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. So I guess to get started, give us a background on how you got started with video and what has basically taken you to where you are now.
Yeah, so I have like a pretty interesting come up. One of those interesting you might hear. I don't know if I'm bragging too much about the interestingness of my come up. But so I never grew up like a filmmaker. Like I didn't grow up with a camera in my hand. So I was like an athlete my whole life. Like when you're in high school, like it's like, oh, like theater stuff, stupid. Like,
yeah, that's
I don't
want to
do that. Yeah, right. So I was like never really involved with the arts too much, which is a sad thing because now knowing now how much I love and enjoy it, it's like sad feeling like I wasted a lot of that time in my youth, like not trying to like pursue a creative route. But so I went to college and I was doing marketing, and I was like, I really want to get into the music industry doing like music management. Like I was like, I'm going to be the next Scooter Braun or something like that. So I was just like trying to figure out like a way into the music industry. So my junior year of college, I reached out to a manager, like a musician's manager. I was like, I'm going to intern with him. And that musician, I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Lil Dicky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like a he's a comedic rapper who is now has his own huge TV show.
Right. It's funny because I was ready to say I probably haven't because I just don't follow rap at all, but I have heard of that. Yeah. I've seen his trailer on all that stuff. So
yeah, pretty much if you're around our age or younger, you know who Lil Dicky is just because he's a phenom, like just like his concepts are so unique, and it's just like a different genre in itself. You know, it's funny, but it's also like very well crafted. And dude, again, he has a huge show now, so it's like But
I think I caught one of his freestyles recently on YouTube. It was phenomenal. I had to switch it off just because it was kind of vulgar, but
that's his lane. Like when he's so he has Lil Dicky, who's this like very just like we'll say anything rapper, but him as a person, Dave Bird is much separated.
Dave,
so like Dave. But I reached out to his manager. I was like, hey, like wrote him a really well-crafted email, like I'd love to intern for you, and like these are the things that I can do for you. And like that night they scout me.
Wow.
I'm just like this college kid, and Lil Dicky at the time wasn't like a huge name at all. Like if you saw his first two YouTube videos, like you knew who he was, kind of thing. But so they scouted me, and they're like, yeah, this is perfect timing, we'd love for you to come out to LA this summer.
And whoa,
like tour around the country with us and just like be our intern. So obviously that's like a huge deal for someone looking, a young person like me trying to get into the music industry.
Damn, so
I got there. Yeah, I got there. He was rapidly growing as a musician. We toured around the country and around Canada. We like slept in the same RV. Like,
wow.
The AC in the RV didn't work, and it was like the dead of summer. It was like really it was really just like roughing and toughing it the entire time. But I would have had it no other way, just because it was a fun experience. But But on that tour, like during the actual shows, I would help set up and like do the logistics and stuff. But while he was actually performing, obviously there wasn't anything for me to do. So they had like this little Canon 70D or something like that. And they're like, hey, like want to just like take pictures and videos of the tour, like whenever you get a chance. So it's like, yeah, sure. Like I've never like actually used the camera in my life. So I was just like taking horrible, like talk about like throwing yourself into the wolves, trying to learn how to do photography at like a concert, like super dark venues, like no idea what any of the buttons did. Like, so I was just taking like horrible photos and horrible videos. But the tour was like a month and a half long. And as the tour went, I was like, oh, like I kind of like this. And I started like looking up tutorials on YouTube. And along the way, I just like started to get better and better at like shooting photos and shooting video. And so like that happened.
Nice.
Internship ended, went back to school for my senior year of college. And like, I was like, I can't make a living doing photo and video. Like, this isn't going to be like a career path for me. Like, I'm just going to get a marketing job. So that's what I did. Got a terrible marketing job. Like, hated my life. Like, it got to the point like 3 months in, like, I sat in the bathroom. Like, you ever been in, like, the handicap stalls?
Or yeah. There's, like, this. I love those.
It's got, like, its own sink and, like, mirror.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just, like, sitting on the toilet with my pants on. Like, that's how much I hate work. I would just go and sit on the toilet with my pants on.
You didn't even have to use the bathroom.
Yeah, just killing time, like, sitting on my phone. And I remember, like, sitting there, and I looked up in the mirror, and I could see myself just, like, sitting there. And I just, like, broke down. I just, like, started crying my eyes out. I'm like, this is what I want for my life. Like, I can't do this. Like, I'm miserable.
Wow.
Like, I need to make a change. So I spent, like, the next 2 weeks, like, on the job, just, like, researching, like, everything else. And I remembered how much I love photo and video. And I have luckily a cousin who's a DP. He's 10 years older than me. So he's been doing it a long time. And I like could kind of like see his work and see that he was able to make a living doing something like that. So that kind of inspired me and just like really taking it seriously. So from then I just like sat on YouTube, like spent every waking second of my life trying to learn the craft. And I bought myself a camera with the money I got from my first job. Just like really went at it, you know, and here I am today, just like 4 years later, just like really, really doing it up.
Did you say 4 years later?
Yeah.
So that was 4 years ago.
It hasn't been long, which is, I feel really grateful for.
Yeah, that's good, man. I think that, no, you're good. I think that speaks to how much you actually love it. I feel like I've seen people do this art that we do for years they have not improved.
Yeah, right.
And I think that, for me, when I see that personally, it could be a number of other reasons why. Maybe they are comfortable where they are. they don't seek to improve their work. They don't seek to improve their craft. And I see it. We're our own biggest critics, right? And like I can look at videos that I made several years ago and just cringe. But when I see people that their videos are the same years and years and years and later, I feel like, man, you know, they're doing, and there's nothing wrong with it. They're doing it for money. If they found something that works for them, that's what works for them. But then, you know, when you see after 4 years seeing the work that you're putting out, there has to be passion and love in there for what you do. This might be a reason why, and I'm just going on a tangent here just because this is something that's just coming to me, but I think this definitely is a reason why we're freelancers, because I don't know if any company would be able to pay us the amount of money that we invest into making our work better, you know?
Yeah, correct.
The YouTube hours that we put into it to get better at what we do, like all of that, there's value in that companies are, you know, if they were really to pay us how much we invest into our art, that'd be a hefty paycheck.
Yeah, right.
Every and 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. And like for some reason, when you're out here by yourself and you're freelancing, like there's that extra motivation to kind of run yourself into the ground, which is strange. But like I always felt like by working for someone else, like as soon as that clock hit 5 o'clock,
like, oh yeah,
I'm my own person. Like this is over between me and you until the next day. But I'm living with my boss, like at this point. Like I'm constantly with my boss and every day I'm like, I don't want to let myself down. Like I'm always gonna be working. Which can get scary, because like you can definitely wear yourself out and run yourself into the ground, but it's so much more of a rewarding experience than if you were doing it for anyone else. Like it wouldn't be worth it to run yourself into the ground if it was for another person. So and like guys like me and you, like we love it. Like we love working hard for ourselves. Like we love seeing the reward that comes from how hard we're pushing ourselves. So yeah, we're kind of psychopaths, honestly.
How old were you when you started freelancing?
Probably like 23. I was pretty young. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe 22. I don't know. I was like really young. I only like worked at my first job for like 6 months, and I just like dove into life. Was like super poor for a while.
At 24 years old is when I started my business, freelancing.
And you probably kind of knew your whole life that like something inside of you like knew that like you were going to be doing something entrepreneurial.
Well, it's funny. It's actually funny. I did not, because I was not raised to think that way. You know, I was raised have a job. But the funny thing is, up until that point, I've never had a job for longer than a year. And that's because at the 1 year mark, roughly, give or take, either my laziness comes into effect, or just the fact that I just don't like this job. So I'm not going to go above and beyond for it. And like you said, I am waiting for that to clock out. You know, I don't want to stay a minute more. If you're living like that, it sucks. It sucks.
And there's a certain thrill to like working on your own as opposed to working with you're in charge of like whether you're going to survive this month, you know?
Yeah, dude, that is very true. That is very true.
And I kind of like that. Like, it's kind of exciting. Like at any point, like I could work hard enough where, you know, the ceiling's unlimited, you know?
I don't know if I would categorize that as exciting. I think we're thinking about the same thing in a sense that it does light a fire up under me to make me need to get better, to make me need to go out and look for work. Like it does give me more reason to try and find that. And, you know, I think that although I don't know what it is, what your case is like, most of my jobs are not very glamorous. Like most of my jobs, I'm going out there shooting stuff that is not very sexy or looks good. And I'm just delivering footage. And I'm like, all right, you know, this is for a paycheck. But people, there's a lot of people that would die to be able to freelance and, you know, make a living, you know, doing what we're doing. And I think that is a huge blessing for sure.
I always think about that. Like, 60% of my jobs aren't cool.
Yeah.
But every job can't be cool. Mm. Like, because the jobs you care about and the cool jobs, like they will throw you over a cliff. Like how much anxiety comes with like trying to like outdo yourself on those and deliver on the cool ones. And like, those are really the ones you care about so much. And you can't do too many of those because they will really wear you down. Just from like the pre-production you put into it and just like all the extra hours you put into making that one perfect. So it's great to have a balance of like the ones that you can just like, you know, show up and just like paint the scene with your camera, and like you just like kind of know how to edit it the proper way and just like make it look a certain way without a ton of like mental capacity being spent on it.
There's some things that you just already know. You don't have to think about too much.
Yeah, like the corporate stuff, like the interview B-roll combination. Like, man, I won't even think about it. I'll just like pull up, whip out my camera, shoot the thing, and I like know exactly what to shoot, and I leave, and like nothing was spent like on my end. Like
it's a routine.
Yeah, you get to a point where like it doesn't wear you down mentally, and it is a good thing to have because it's still paying the bills, but you're not, you know, losing any of your like your creative capacity or anything like that that you can spend on the cooler stuff that you actually care about.
I never thought about it that way. That's a very interesting take to our freelancing careers. If everything was creative, I can see how that would be mentally exhausting. I've never been there, but that's just because I've never been 100% creative jobs only.
Yeah, I can only do like a couple cool projects a month just because like I'll kill myself. Not like suicide, kill myself, like just like run myself into the ground.
Right.
But I always try to like limit it to like, obviously if they come from like a client side, I'll do it. But like on my own, like creative endeavors, like I'll try to limit that to like one a month if I can.
That's a lot for me.
Well, dude, with YouTube, you kind of got to like make your own content. No,
that's very true. Is that how often you post on your YouTube channel?
No, once a week on the YouTube channel.
Really?
It's a nightmare.
That seems taxing because I've tried it on and off and I just haven't been able to get there for the past several years just because of my busy work schedule and whatnot. And something I was going to tell you that I didn't finish, it was you and Mark Bone watching you guys on YouTube literally for the past month or so. I'm like, you know what? The way these guys are doing their YouTube videos, it doesn't seem, it looks kind of blended, very, very nice. It's not as polished as these YouTubers that do these huge dynamic B-roll shots and all this stuff. It's nothing crazy. Just get in front of the camera, talk your mind, right? And show some reference of what you're speaking about. So I'm starting to try and find a rhythm that would help kind of maintain some sort of workflow there. I don't know about once a week, but I think I can start doing something like that in that sense, you know?
Right. So I started like I was sporadic with it for like 2 years. Like I started my YouTube channel like 2 years ago, like didn't put much effort into it at all. This is funny because the video I made for that's coming out tomorrow actually touches on this. So I barely put much into it. Then the pandemic happened. I was like, I'm just going to put all my creative energy into my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And I started like really doing it up, like really putting a lot of effort into like writing scripts and like making sure everything was like very well done. And once I started putting that effort in, like all of a sudden, you know, 60,000 people just walked through my door here. And it's like, I'm like, I have to deliver once a week now. Like if I want this to continue to grow and to continue to be a thing, like I don't want to let these people down. Like I've been like delivering videos every Monday for the past like 4 months or so, 5 months or so. And like, I'm not going to like... I know people are like looking forward to that every Monday and they like down and like eat their breakfast and watch my videos. But now that the pandemic has kind of like quieted down a bit and, you know, the film industry is opening back up.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I'm in a position where YouTube is a full-time job and I'm getting like more film work than ever coming through my door at the same time. So
it's a good problem.
I'm trying to put 100% into both of these things right now, which you know, I'm overextending myself. Obviously, that's going to lead to me burning out, and like I'm already starting to see myself only like putting 75% into YouTube and 75% into my real DP career, and I'm still overextending myself. Like by trying to give more than 100% of myself, but I'm starting to see like diminishing returns in those products. So I'm kind of like at this crossroads where I'm like, do I try to make this YouTube channel really go? Do I put I don't want to make good products. Like I want to make extraordinary things. And in order to do that, I have to pick one.
Yeah.
Like I've already showed myself that like I can't make both like really epic. So I'm kind of at this weird place.
I don't think that it has to be one or the other. I think that there definitely should be some sacrifices made, and you could even explain this to your audience so they're not sort of taken back when they don't see a video on Monday. Maybe either make it bi-weekly, you know, just because a video a week is a lot of work.
It is.
Yeah. I do a podcast a week and that already is, and this is only for audio, which, you know, I started the podcast because YouTube just was consuming way too much time. This is just a much easier format, much easier workflow for me that I can maintain and just contact people like I did with you via Instagram and just have conversations like this. But to have a polished video a week is quite a bit of work. So maybe dial it back a little bit or just take a break altogether. But I think, in my opinion, just simply dialing it back and sort of going bi-weekly would definitely give you some breathing room where you don't have that constant pressure of having to produce a video. Right. This coming Monday.
And I think what I've been leaning towards was actually making YouTube the number one option for me.
Okay.
But not like stopping, like,
sure.
Like creating like awesome projects. Like I think it's like I stopped doing the money making gigs. Like I stopped going to the corporate offices and doing that whole thing.
Okay.
And obviously, that's a big hit to my income because right now, as it stands, like YouTube's just like a very, very small fraction of the income that I make through my actual filmmaking career.
Sure.
And, but I know like that YouTube money is going to come eventually.
Yeah.
Like with the growing channel, with, you know, you're able to take time to do brand integrations. Like I'm starting a Patreon account. So all that's going to, hopefully, if that's able to take the place of all those little money-making gigs that I'm doing, then I'm able to only shoot the really awesome gigs that I want to shoot or only create the really awesome projects that I want to create. And then I'm also able to make YouTube content out of those really epic projects that people want to see. Because I feel like a lot of people subscribe to me because I actually am like a industry cinematographer. Like I'm a working, growing industry cinematographer, while, you know, a lot of people, they're like, a lot of YouTube filmmakers aren't, which is a totally different category. It's awesome what they're doing. It's just I feel like people are subscribed to me because they're not looking to make YouTube a career. They're looking to make filmmaking a career, like industry filmmaking
very
a career,
true.
Which is a very separate thing. So I don't want to like lose touch with those people by like just like cutting myself off, you know?
Right.
So yeah, like to your point, like I don't have to cut both for the dramatic expression of my YouTube video. It's kind of like so choosing one or the other.
I guess it was basically sacrifice on the other end. So instead of sacrificing on YouTube, sacrifice on, like you said, your actual business that's making money. Yeah. I think that's also a good move in the sense that it's future-proofing your income. You know, like,
of course,
it's a sacrifice now, but what you're going to build up is something that you have full control over. Like, if you decide later on, you know what, I'm making more money now, let me up it to 2 videos a week and get more income coming in. I'm going to put a lot more work, but it's going to bring a lot more money later on. So you have that control. And I think that that's awesome to have the control of doing that.
Yeah, and also like the like just like I started my YouTube channel, like I just wanted to like I had no expectations for it. I wanted to help like one person one day somewhere in the world because I took a lot of information and I learned so much from YouTube. So I just wanted to like be able to like contribute to that community one day, just like help give back. And then like over the past few months, like literally seeing like thousands of people like message me and be like, hey, like you've inspired me so much, like you've helped my life so much, like you've helped me in my career, like I don't think I'll ever feel or see anything like more any more success than that in my my career. Like, that is such a gratifying feeling. And when I thought about that, I was like, I can't lose that. Like, I like love like talking to these people. I love helping these people. I love like being in this YouTube community so much. It's such a gratifying experience that like, it's so unique and special that, and I feel like it's something where like, if I ever needed to just like be an industry filmmaker again, it's something I could always jump back into.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
On the contrary, like this YouTube ship is going to sail with or without me. So I'm just, so like, it's like, I got to be like right here, right now with it. So
that's so awesome, man. And I feel you, man. I get messages like that all the time with the podcast. And just like you, even with the podcast, it's funny because I started blazing fast in the sense that I was putting out 3 episodes a week on the podcast.
Crazy.
And yeah, that quickly became like very taxing on me and my work. And imagine every other day you're thinking of a new podcast, of a new topic. And at the beginning, I had a ton. I had a ton of things that I can discuss. And slowly but surely, it started going away. And there have been at least 2 times where I took a small break from the podcast just because it was, I needed to get that break to not have that pressure to produce more content and really also to rethink why I'm doing it, you know?
For sure.
And so, now I'm back. And just like you, it's that's super true that you have to sort of maintain one foot in the industry because that's knowledge that you're transferring back to your audience. Your message on your YouTube channel, I think it's very unique. It spoke to me. It's what drove me to subscribe as a freelance filmmaker. And it's mainly the lighting episodes. I love your style of lighting, and it's something that I try to achieve oftentimes. So that was very helpful for me. That's unique. And I think that things like that are your strengths, right? And then my sort of message through this podcast is just freelancing in general, in the sense that dealing with clients, you know, with the podcast, answering emails, something as simple as answering an email, you know, where I'm telling people do not answer with just one word. That's like, you know, give them a full complete sentence.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy how many people don't know how to write an email. Like, I actually made a video about this just because I was seeing like people were emailing me. I was like, is this how like people like I reach out to, like, is this like the kind of things that are seeing every day too? Like, I couldn't believe my eyes, like how like unprofessional and just like,
yes,
like boring people's messages were. Like, I know when I reach out to people, like I want to get their attention. Like, I do my research. I like figure out their little tics and like what they love. And like, I make it very personalized and make it so that they can't not respond to you.
Of course. You know?
Like if someone like reaches out to me and like, now I'm going to get like a million emails about like people using this, but if people like reach out to me and just like drop like something funny about my dog Sansa, like, hell yeah, I'm going to answer. Like, you know me, like, I respect that you like know my dog's name. Like, but like sometimes people are like, yo, like, what camera should I buy? Like, delete. Like, I'm not even gonna like take, I'm not gonna waste my time on like this person. Like,
well, you know what, that's a good segue. Let's talk about that, right? One of the things that I love about your work, and like I said, when I went to your website, I could not just watch one video just because they all look so good, and I'm sort of trying to take in the imagery that you capture, but also, you know, I really enjoyed the sounds also. That's something that I need to get better at myself, how to sort of use sound in my, it's not just a good image, it's the sound that kind of complements that image and makes
I
it even more.
That, because like, it takes like way more time for me to do the sound design than put together
the which is why like
people don't understand that, like like how much time I've, because audio is obviously 50% experience, and like, honestly, like outside of like my own videos, I never touch audio. Like, I'm a DP. Like, I'm in charge of the visuals.
Sure.
So like, when I have to like go into like my own passion project or whatever and do the sound design, it is like my worst nightmare. Like,
yes, that's
like, I'm like slaving away for like 3 days, just like trying to find the right sound for like a punch.
You know? So it's good. It's good to know that I'm not the only one that when dude, I sit it down, it's
like, I can't believe people like only do that for their career. Like, good for you.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to get better at it just because I see the benefit of it, like how it immerses the audience into your film that they're watching. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved Bad Mama, right? Yeah, you just released that recently.
That one took a while.
Terrific. Great job. Yeah, sound-wise, it was awesome. So definitely the time paid off because that was really, really good. I loved the story. It's fantastic. The cinematography obviously was...
Thanks, man.
Was definitely really, really good. So, by the way, side note, just to give you an idea for a video, I don't know if you've already made this one yet, but
go ahead.
Show a video without that sound design and then show it with the sound design and show the benefits of it. I think that I have barely ever seen that. So, I think I would watch it.
I could do that. I could do that, but then like I don't want to have to explain how I do sound design.
No, you don't have to. Just give
small
examples. Like this is the difference.
Yeah.
Like
I could do
if
that.
So here's the thing. I see my videos, right? Because I'm not heavy in sound design. I see my videos and I'm like, the images are good. I like them. I'm happy with them. But my video is not coming out as good as another video, like one of your videos. It's because of that sound design, that extra time that you put into that. It's what's making watching your films a much more immersive experience. And I think that that plays a huge role into that. So, and it'd be very beneficial to sort of explain that route. You know,
I'll try it out.
I'm just letting you know.
People, I always get like a, like, do like a color grading tutorial and I'm like, ah, oh, dude, like I just like don't want to like sit there and talk about like the sliders.
No, you know? No, in general, I'm talking about in general, like
I'll keep it high level.
No, absolutely, because you could do an easy video and it won't take you that long to just cut up the footage. Like we mentioned, the time comes.
I could just export the trailer from Bad Mama with and without sound design and just...
Oh, yeah, do that.
The trailer is like half of the sound design of the video. You should see there's like the premiere timeline and like the top layer is like a... like two lines of like visuals and the bottom layer of the audio is like...
Oh, my God. Like, that's insane.
Million different like little things.
And people don't appreciate
and like things
that
you wouldn't even like ever notice. Like things like I'll even like mute like a sound. I'll play and I'm like, I don't even know what it's doing, but I'll just like keep it there.
Man, it's insane. And the more I see it, hear it, like I can tell when there was a lot of effort put into the sound because it immerses you. I think that's fantastic.
And you're always, it's always like, it's like people will hear like the sound of like, you know, if someone hitting a punching bag and it's like not actually a sound of a punching bag. You're like distorting like someone like dropping a pan on carpet and like rewinding that and then put reverb on it. It's like a whole art, like watch.
It's
like,
funny.
Have you ever watched the videos of like how they do it, like big Hollywood productions, like The Folly, and like it's like some like old head like in a studio with like a bin of like grass and like a brick, and he's like rubbing the brick against the grass.
I love watching those videos because it's
then
just
it's like
so
someone walking in grass. It's like
so funny, especially when they make the animated movies. Those are the ones that are. People freak out when I tell them that are not in the industry, but when I tell them like any movie that we're watching, you know, or any movie that they've seen, I'll tell them like 95% of the audio that you're hearing is not really like being recorded at that time.
Right.
Even the dialogue, you know, like outdoor dialogue does not sound that good.
And like when they do like wide shots, like that's just wild audio, like recording lines like the next day or something.
The footsteps, the wind breezing, like they want control of all that stuff. So all that stuff is just separate layers. But I wanted to go into, I was a big fan of the imagery that you were producing in your films. I wanted to see what your approach was when sort of directing or DPing, when really DPing your jobs. Like what aspects, what variables do you consider before you start lighting? And do you do that the day of the shoot sometimes maybe, or are you planning this days in advance, like with the location scouting and all that stuff?
Going back to our earlier points, if it's a shoot I care about, it's definitely like a lot of pre-production, like weeks in advance. Like you're going out and doing a scout day, you're going to the locations that you're shooting at, and just like being in that space and looking around, seeing where the light, like, so I'm a very like naturalistic cinematographer. Like I don't want things to look high key. I want things to look very natural.
Right.
So I'm walking into the space and, you know, I'm looking at where the light is already falling. Like, is it coming from the windows? Is what kind of light's coming from the windows? Is it cool light? What time of the day are we going to be in this space? Is the sun going to be in a specific, like location shining directionally through a window or what have it? Or is the light coming from fluorescent bulbs overhead? Like, how do I keep the lighting as true as possible to the actual location itself? I'm never showing up thinking like, I'm going to like recreate the wheel of lighting, like in a room. Like, like you walk into a location and it's lit for you. Like all you're doing is augmenting that light to appear better on video, because obviously like, if you just stuck your subject there and pulled up the camera, it would look dark. Like there'd be things missing. Cinematography is all about like taking what you have and just like adding little nuances for it to look better on camera and for it to better tell your story in some way. It's so much easier than people think. Like people like don't know where to put their lights. Like it's already the room's telling you where to put your light. Like there's a window right there.
Right.
Put your light outside the frame just so you can wrap that window light just around your subject's face to make it look like it's coming from that window, but so you can see your subject's face on the camera. Like it's so much simpler than people think. Like people like get intimidated by the gear. It's like, what's an M18? Like how do I diffuse this? Like muslin, poly, like frames, grip equipment. Like as a cinematographer, that's not your job. Like you don't need to know like what fixture to use. You don't need to know like it helps knowing those things, but that's not your job. Like you're like when you get to a specific level of like your DP career, like you're not touching anything. You're just like, hey, like I just want like a big soft source wrapping around this window.
Yeah.
Like that's what you tell people on your set and they make it happen. Like it's such an easier job than people think.
Yeah.
It's just like you need to like just understand the fundamentals and like understand why you're lighting and like what's the room doing? Like that's all it is. which is crazy. Like it sounds simpler. I guess I'm making it sound simpler. But it takes that practice, like walking into a room and like seeing like just like walk into a room and just like see where the light's falling and then like see how you can just make that light look better for your camera.
Do you think that, although that is very true, because I don't DP as much as you do in a sense that where I have control of a crew, I've done it maybe a handful of times and you're right. It's pretty fun because all I have to worry about is where I want the light and just tell them where to put it. But at some point, though, you have to know this stuff as well.
Yeah.
No, like, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, on a smaller level. Because, at the beginning, obviously, you don't have that crew. But, you have, like, your little lights. You have, your aperture light that, like, everyone else buys on YouTube. Like, that kind of thing. Yeah. I'm actually sponsored by Namlight Global now. But
are you really?
Yeah, they send me lights, which is awesome. They're actually amazing lights. Yeah.
I like the RGB tubes that I have.
Yeah, I got like a actually, like, I left everything in the car. I got home from a shoot at like 3 a.m. last night. So don't ever leave stuff in your car if you're listening. Like, don't.
Oh, it's not, man, a good idea. You'll get your stuff sometimes. Yeah. I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. I don't feel like.
Yeah, dude. 16-hour shoot day yesterday. I'm not,
oh,
like,
goodness.
I'm not bringing my stuff up. Like, if it gets stolen, like, whatever at that
insurance.
Point. Like, it should get stolen at that point.
It should.
I can take a break. But, like, you know how to use your aperture light. You know how to use your light that you built at Home Depot. Like, they're easy lights to use. That's all you need to know how to use. Like, now it's just about, like, where do I put this light? Like, I'm going to walk in and I'm just going to put it right off to the side of the window to help wrap that light around my subject's face. Like, it's all the same, like, at a certain point. It's just, like, the equipment gets different and the equipment gets bigger. And that's not stuff you necessarily have to worry about at a certain point. But while you're on your own, like, you know how to use your stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, and it's good to learn how to be creative with what you have and what you don't have, really.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, most of the bigger shoots, it's like you have a lighting package of like three things. Like, what are you going to create with these three lights? And it's kind of better that way. Like, you know, your limits rather than taking a time to be like, well, we could just, like, you know, put this M18 on a Mambo stand and jack it up to the window, then shoot it through, blah, blah, blah. But like, if you don't have a Mambo stand to get it up, like, okay, we can't use a light through the window. We're going to have to use the sun. Let's find a specific time of the day where the sun is coming through that window. And we can use the punch from that. But
I noticed in a lot of your videos that the style are very similar. Like, if I was to see another video, not from your website, I could probably say I could see this being from Danny. You know, like, this looks like his work.
Yeah.
How much of the story dictates how you use the lighting and how you shoot?
Yeah, so like, most of the stuff you see is like what I want you to see, like like the stuff I think looks good, and the stuff I think looks good is like moodier and, like, you know, high contrast ratios and like low key kind of thing. So, but like, I'm like always shooting like high key stuff. I just like never put it on my website because I don't want people to hire me for those things. I want to be hired to shoot like the lower
super
stuff.
Interesting.
But really, like it's the director's call, the client's call. Like, if it's a company that's like, their branding is not dark and moody, I'm not shooting, you know, their commercial dark and moody. I'm shooting it high key. Like,
right.
I'm not going to put that on my website.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So like, as like a freelance DP, you're not necessarily like dictating what that looks going to be 100%. Like you kind of get the branding from the director and the client, and kind of just like working off what they have. Like 90% of the time, the client's like, it's too dark. You're like, oh God. And you flip it to the log profile that looks brighter. You're like, see, it's like super bright. But then you flip it back and you're like crushing blacks like left and right. But now I'm like, I usually get in trouble with the client. Just like, hey, like, it's too dark. And you're like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. But obviously, like, it's their shoot. They're paying for it. So
right.
It's like, all right, let's walk in another light.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, because I've kind of wrestled with that myself a little bit, where I know the style that I like. I know I like soft lighting, as you do. I know you do. I know that
especially
kind
on like a person's face.
No, yeah, absolutely. And basically your style of shooting is really where my style is as well, in terms of like my preference.
Right.
I've always felt an early in my career, I was doing commercials for, like, you know, a bunch of local but well-known companies here in Miami that is not dark and moody, even though that's kind of sort of what I kind of like.
Yeah.
However, I'm there putting on my website my passion projects, which are dark and moody, but at the same time, I'm putting the commercials that are not. They're nice and bright and vibrant and colorful. Right. And I've always felt like, you know, it was one of those things where I'm not too crazy about having those mixed in, because I enjoy the ones that I'm making for passion better. So
It really depends are you a production company? Are you a DP?
Right.
Are you a director? Like, what are you trying to market yourself as? Like, if you're a production company, it might make sense to have a larger variety of work because you want to kind of attract like any client. But as like a DP cinematographer,
sure,
like you're going to get hired because you're the guy that's right for that specific job.
Yeah.
So like Nike wants like a running commercial. Nike is like notoriously has moodier content. Like it's a naturalistic in the way it looks. Like they're not going to go to like someone shooting like high key Pepsi stuff. Like they're going to go to someone like me, or like at least Nike's not doing the outreach or hiring production companies that are going to hire me.
Right.
So really, I mean, it depends what you are, what you're trying to shoot, and what your taste is. Like, so like there's great DPs who will look at my work and like who shoot high key stuff, and their taste is like they like high key stuff, and they'll think my work stinks and like they don't want to shoot moodier stuff. So it's all like taste, what you want to shoot, like where you want to be a part of, like within the film industry.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously I don't have that on my website anymore, but it's more of because I prefer to do the jobs that I, like you said, like want to do. That's more fun that way for me. And so it's definitely what I enjoy.
Yeah, of course. are you trying to like promote yourself as a production company or just
no,
like
as an individual? So I'm mostly sort of I work mostly one man band style, which is why the amount of gear that I have is kind of a little too much at this point.
Right.
But
yeah,
most of the time I have an assistant with me or two to kind of give me a hand with all the gear. But
yeah,
it's not, that's something that I was really trying to kind of sort of figure out, but maybe I haven't really researched it too much, how I should brand myself. But it's really just me as a freelancer. It's not really like sort of a production company per se.
Right. Yeah. So me like injecting my two cents of advice, like whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
So I always tell people if there's only like a certain like level of like quality of client that you're going to get if you're one man banding in and like trying to promote yourself as like someone who's doing everything, because the bigger clients, like, you know, that we all want to shoot for some reason, we're like all dying to shoot for a brand. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, it's all just a brand. But like the Nikes, like the whatever bigger client, like you want to talk about, like they're not hiring one man bands.
Oh no,
to shoot their videos.
I'm fully aware of that.
Production companies are, you know, hiring DPs.
Yeah.
Oh, they're hiring producers, and the producers are bringing on directors, and directors are choosing their DPs, and DPs are choosing their gaffer grip.
Yeah.
Like that whole, and it's like a whole streamlined system. So I always tell people, if you're like cool with shooting like the mid-range stuff, like one man banding is totally fine. Sure. But if you want to get those bigger clients and you want to be on bigger shoots, like you have to kind of specialize in something, like pick something that you love the most about the film industry and be really good at that and promote yourself as that. So I've been able to see my like career grow so quick as a DP because I decided at an early age, like I'm going to just really market myself as a DP, and like people are bringing me on as a DP, and like production companies who are getting these bigger clients, like I'm not doing the client outreach. They're bringing me onto those shoots. So I've been able to like grow and like see bigger shoots at such a faster rate than if I was trying to like one man band myself to the top.
No, that's good. And I definitely agree 100%. And
yeah,
for those that are listening to this, that's some great advice.
Yeah. And it's hard because like you're so used to doing everything yourself.
No,
like,
absolutely.
It's hard to like get away from like handing off the footage for someone else to edit because you know, you don't know if they're going to do a job. It's like a trust thing. And like you want to, it's fun doing the whole thing sometimes. But at a certain point, like, there's going to be people who are better at editing, people who are better at coloring.
Oh, yeah.
100%. But I know I'm, like, better at DPing. So, like, that's going to be my role in the bigger project.
Yeah. No, I fully agree there. For me, it's been more of I prefer to work that way for the sure. commercial, yeah. for the commercial projects. Yeah. But I think it's more of I kind of enjoy every aspect of production, you know, yeah. and you're right. I can't, I'm not going to be, Nike's not going to be calling me saying, make this
yeah.
commercial for us. And I'm okay right. with that. I've accepted that. And it's not that I can't make a lot of money. I'm very happy right. with the amount of money yeah, that of I'm course. Making. And there's a lot of room for growth. There's still a lot of room yeah. for growth. You know, I want to get to the point where my entire schedule is full with jobs that I'm doing yeah. for different companies. Right. And
for me, I like when I was doing like the one man band, I still do on like passion projects all the time. But I like, I always like sat back and like, I like reflect on like the shoot day and I'm like, I felt really overwhelmed and I felt like I was missing like certain things and like certain things could have been better if this was a crew, like if there was like I know there's like people that are better at gaffing than me. Like I know there's people that are better directing at me. Yeah. Like how, for me, I was like, how do I like make my work look next level? Yeah. Like where, like where's that separation? Like, cause I always felt like there was only so much I could do
yeah.
as a one man band to make something look a certain way. And for it to have that like extra level that just like, you, there's always yeah. that like
no, absolutely.
Level above. And I was like, there's no, like,
and
you need a crew for that. Like that's kind of, and I was like, I want to be making that work. So like, I need to like, kind of just like understand that I'm not the best director. Like my talents are better off. Like, with the camera in my hand, like making things look pretty
yeah.
and let like someone else kind of be really good at something else on set. And like this group effort, like kind of like combines into this super product.
Nice. And so as a DP, how often do you see yourself actually shooting it? Or how often do you see yourself just lighting? And maybe there's already a camera operator on set that's going to be grabbing the shots or.
Yeah, I refuse to let someone else operate. Oh, if I'm really? DPing.
Nice.
I need to have my hands on the camera. So yeah, I like yeah, like I need to have hands on camera like at all times. I have done like, so that's another thing. I was like, I even had a crew on a music video I was shooting, but like I had a Steadicam operator and just like having my hands off the camera oh. for like that little bit of time, it was just like killing me. Like you're not getting exactly what you want, which is like really frustrating as someone who's just like always controlling the camera. So like, yeah, I'm like big on like, I'll keep the camera in my hands until they pry it away from me.
That's good. And
cause I know even like guys like Deacons, like he's always trying to like keep the camera in his hands as much as possible. I know he's getting old and fragile, so he's not like walking around with like a giant like Steadicam. It is a physical battle being on set and being on shoots. Like people don't understand like how exhausting and like
yes,
like, how much of a physical toll like shoot days take on you. It's not just all
mental. Oh yeah, it really is. And I don't know how other people do it. I
me
think
neither.
I'd like to consider myself pretty physically fit. And even that, just carrying a camera all day long in my hand gets tiring.
Yeah, dude.
It gets so tiring.
So yesterday, like 16-hour shoot day, it's a documentary about like the, you know, some of the incidents that happened with police and the protest in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like this whole group got stuck on like, got like marched onto the highway and the police just like tear gas and like flash banged this like whole mob. And it was like shooting rubber bullets into the crowd type situation. So we were like talking to like a bunch of like the people who were like victims of that situation who are a part of the protest. But a 16-hour day, like interviews were like an hour and a half long, handheld. So I'm holding, you know, this giant rig. Like I'm shooting a 30-70 ingenue, like anamorphic lens, which is the lens itself is about 10 pounds. Man. The camera body, I'm holding like a 35 pound rig on an easy rig for just standing in place for an hour and a half, like at different points in the day. And like, I'm like, I don't know if anyone else could do this. Like, nope. I'm like a athlete. Like I work out every day. Like how does this old head DP that smokes cigarettes on lunch break? Like how's he holding this? Like,
I know. Yeah, man. It's, I don't know how other people do it. It's taxing. Do you use gimbals?
If the shot calls for it, yeah.
You're right, right. So have you held the Ronin 2 gimbal or the Movi Pro?
Yeah. So two Saturdays ago, I was shooting. It was the Ursa Mini with Atlas Orion anamorphic, which is a fat lens on the Ronin 2, and I'm like a pretty fast dude. So we were filming like one of the top high school athletes in the nation or something. And I'm like running next to him as he's running patterns and like with this giant gimbal. And dude, it was like, there are very few DPs like who can shoot like me. Like, I don't think very many in general who can shoot like me and can run with this, like in this moment. God. So like, dude, it's like
talk
such
about
an
a
advantage.
Football workout, man.
Yeah. It's a total advantage. Like being like
physically fit,
keeping physically fit strong. And just like having the athletic background, just like actually like mentally push yourself through the pain.
Oh yes.
Cause dude, it's, you'll find yourself in like the most painful position ever, like trying to hold an interview or like a shot, you know? And it's like, I need this shot. Like I'm going to work through it. But like, I know so many people just like wouldn't do it, you know?
Dude, that's awesome. That's awesome that you played football too. I didn't know that. Yeah, I thought you were going to say baseball maybe. Or
I ran track and played football in college. Okay. So like, I was like always like track was, it's, I was always like very like speed.
Yeah.
So like I actually like really got into like the production companies that shoot for like Nike and stuff because I shot a video with Odell Beckham and I was just running next to him with a gimbal. And they're like, holy crap, like, like we need this. And they like pulled me out like to shoot like the NFL Pro Bowl skills challenge. I'm like running around with like a gimbal, like chasing like these athletes all day. And like not many people can do that. So it's like,
be honest, you felt good. You felt good.
Oh, yeah.
When you were able to showcase.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, if I'm shooting like on a field, like I'll cleat up, like I'm putting cleats on, like I'm like warming up, like I'm doing like A skips, like get my body ready to like perform.
I had the same moment when I shoot a lot of CrossFit, not a lot really, but I do it every now and then, but with like the top, I'm talking like Noah Olsen. He's right now number two. He's a friend of mine. He's a Miami local also. But I was with him and a bunch of other CrossFitters. And it's funny, but the producers that hired me were telling me that I told them I'll run right next to them. I have a gimbal.
Yeah.
And I can just run right next to them on the track that they're about to do a race or whatnot. They were literally warning me like 10 times, like, you're not going to keep up with them. Yeah. You're not going to keep up with them. Right. Yeah. And I think I'm adept enough in sports to know that when somebody is that big, these guys are jacked. When they're that big, they're not that fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They're not that fast. And like, okay, you know, I was being humble. And I'm like, all right, well, let's do it. And what ended up happening was I had to slow down for them.
Yeah. you're just like
jogging. And mind you, I have a gimbal in one hand and using only one arm to pump.
Exactly.
You know, as I'm running.
I know what it is. Yeah.
And I'm like slowing down for them. that was my moment, my NFL moment.
It's
there.
Awesome. It feels great, right?
I love it when that happens.
I was shooting I was in Denver shooting Von Miller. It was like he had like a kids camp, and like hundreds of kids, and like they're doing like 40 yard dash, like if you beat Von Miller, like, and so I'm filming it, and
you wanted to get in there the whole time, didn't you?
Well, no, during the 4 yard dash, I'm filming it, And like the championship race, I'm just like jogging next to him. And like I crossed the finish line before him with the gimbal and the whole crowd like erupted. But like I'm also not, awesome. 240 pounds and like 6'5". Like I'm also just like really skinny.
Funny story about Von Miller. I was playing against Texas A&M when I blew out my knee.
Ah, dude, that sucks.
I blew out my knee. This was only my second year though. I did, I came back and was able to keep playing for FIU. Yeah. But we were preparing for Von Miller because he was playing there at the time. And in all the footage that we saw, in all of the film that we were kind of preparing for this game, never did I ever see a defensive end come out and guard a receiver one-on-one.
He's a freak, man.
And I'm like, okay, so I would never expect that. So in the game, when I see out of nowhere, I forgot what number he was, but he comes to me face to face as I'm set up for my route, right? I'm like, why is this guy in front of me guarding me one-on-one? I was so confused. I wasn't about to try and tussle with him hand-to-hand to try to block him because it was a running play. Yeah. So I tried to run him off. He wasn't having it. He was the one that grabbed me.
Yeah, it just like held you there.
I'm like, oh my God. So I'm tussling with him. We're tangled up. We're tangled up. And I think I did a pretty good job considering he's a freaking defensive end.
Right.
Yeah. But unfortunately, like my running back it was an outside run and kind of ran into my knee as he was falling down. Mm. And Von Miller ended up like landing on top of me. Dude, there goes my knee. There goes the season. Thankfully, it was only the second game of the season. So I was able to recover the rest of the season, recover through and come back like during spring training. And
dude, but injuries are the worst, man. They'll crush you mentally. Like it's more the mental aspect of cancer.
Oh yeah, dude. My first play back in practice was that exact same play. It just happened to land like that.
Yeah.
And first thing I did as I was blocking in practice, I let my guy go as the running back got closer to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, nope. Yeah. Not gonna happen this time.
All these camera people are like, why are we talking about football?
I know. I might end up cutting this out.
Nah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah, dude. No. The physically fit part was really good. But so I might we'll see.
The people need to know that you're an athlete.
I think I've mentioned it like 100 times already at this point.
They're like, oh,
every
not
time
again.
Every time like athletics comes up, it's like, hey, I played football. Yeah.
They're like, oh, not again.
So I guess to sort of go back to the whole DPing. So I wanted to talk about gear. Now, I know that I saw in one of your videos that, you don't like to talk about cameras too much.
Right, yeah.
And not that you don't like to, right? It's just that it's such a flexible topic that there's no real right way of doing it, and that's really what you're saying. Like, really, you could use any camera and get good shots.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to go into that and I guess ask, what kind of cameras, like what variables do you consider in a camera when you choose? Do you use the same camera every time, or do you consider different features on a camera when you decide what camera you're going to use for any particular shoot? Dynamic range, low light, whatever.
Yeah, honestly, at the end of the day, it comes down to, what is the budget call for?
Sure.
But, when you're getting on bigger shoots, there's always budget for camera rental and stuff like that. So, like, I personally own a Canon C200, which is a phenomenal camera. Like, very relatively just, like, a great price. And, like, you can make really incredible images out of that camera. But when I'm getting pulled on the bigger shoots, like there's the budget for it, and like, what kind of lenses do I want to shoot with? Do I want to shoot anamorphic? All right, does it need to be, 4K anamorphic? If it's 4K anamorphic, the Lexan Mini doesn't produce 4K images. Like, it really boils down to like, what are the client specifications? If there are no client specifications, and like I can just like pick a camera, like I want like,
what's your camera?
A camera that looks like best, that fits my style, which is very naturalistic look. So I tend to go with the Lexan Mini. The sensor is like very creamy. The highlights fall off super naturally. I just like really love the, the Alexa sensor. And it's just like it's a small body, great form factor. Doesn't even shoot 4K. Like a lot of people like are getting tied up in all these, like this is why I hate talking about gear in the YouTube channel. Yeah. Like people are like, oh, like the Canon, what is it, R5 that just came out. Like what? Yeah, like 8K overheating. Like who cares? Like why do you need to shoot 8K? Like like I shoot like all my big projects on a camera that can't even shoot 4K. Like the Lexi.
What's the highest resolution? Is it like 2.7 or something?
3.2. Yeah, which is like more than you need still. Like, yeah. So, yep, so, yep, yep. So it's like it's just like a beautiful camera, and like it's like at the end of the day, like it's never really about the camera. It's about the story you're telling. It's about the way you light it. It's about, you know, the production design, like what's in the background that you're seeing, what do the locations look like. What does the subject look like? What is the subject wearing? Like there's so many elements that go into it. And camera choice is like 0.5%, not even a whole percent of like what your final image is going to come out looking like. So, you know, there's nothing wrong. Like plenty of like YouTubers like talk about gear. They talk about like cameras and they make a living doing that because it's a fun, exciting topic to talk about. Like there's that there. I don't need to talk about it. Like, but it's so easy for like a, like someone who's like coming into the film world and is like very easily, like you can make an impression on that person. Like they're coming in, like seeing all these camera videos and they're thinking like, that's going to be like the shortcut to success. But it's not like it's like it's just like a fun, easy thing to talk about on YouTube, which is why there's a lot of YouTube videos on it. So that's why I hate talking about it. But like there's so much more you need to learn. And like, so like I know like people are watching my channel and they're like, I want the camera he has so I can shoot the way he does. But like, no, like it's not going to work out that way. Like you can get like any camera I have and like your image is going to look 180 degree different. Like it's like not even going to be close, because like the references that I'm pulling from, like my taste, like the way I learn specific things, like where I'm shooting, like the people I'm shooting with, like everything leads into this culmination of what your final image is going to look like. And the gear is just such a small part of that that people don't really understand because of the volume of content on YouTube about the camera.
Why do you think that people are so obsessed with resolution?
I think it's just like a fancy thing to talk about. Like, I don't want to sound like an a-hole. Like, I don't want, like, if another YouTuber is watching this who does talk about this stuff, like, I don't want them to like feel a certain way. Like, I respect you and like what you talk about. Like, you have your own thing and you're probably really great at it. But like, people need something to talk about because they're not good at shooting. like they need to talk about something. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know what it is. Like people get hung up on like, oh, you can get like 10 different camera angles out of like 12K. Like just shoot one good angle, like shoot it right. And you don't need 10 other angles. Like,
yeah,
but that's me. I know it's like one opinion, one perspective, and that's where I am.
As you were describing what's more important to you than having 4K or 6K or 8K,
right?
That's what I was thinking about just now, that it's things like that that it's hard for a company to come out with. For example, let's say they come out with a regular typical 4K camera. Let's say 2.7K, right? Alexa. Right. They're not going to try and sell it by telling you, if you just light it right, if you just color it correctly, you have all these... So I think that that's not a sell. You know, a sell is course, something that the resolution is a sell, you know?
And that's why I think it's important for like someone with me, with my channel to...
Yeah.
Not just like be a camera marketing company, you know, like,
I mean, like, and
obviously the camera companies have to sell their product, and they're going to sell it by hopping up their specs and like, talking of, and like, but I'm not gonna like play into that and like make people feel like the barrier to entry is as high as it is, because it's really not.
It's not at all. You can go out there and do fantastic work still with like a Canon T3i.
Absolutely.
You know, like it's stuff that
if you can shoot 1080, 24 frames per second, you can make a good commercial.
You're good to go.
A great commercial.
At least have a flat profile, and that way you can have some some sort of range there. But
there's also workarounds. Like if you don't have a camera with high dynamic range, like you learn how to find lower contrast ratios. Like you need to be shooting with lower ratios and higher ratios, where you're not fighting really dark shadows with really bright highlights. Find a way to like shoot something in a shade where there's more even lighting, and things like that. Like learn how to get the most out of your camera.
Yeah,
like it doesn't even need to be like if you learn that, then when you do get the camera, that's super nice. Like you're 100 miles ahead of the person that got the red Komodo last week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's awesome for people to understand that. And you're right. And that's, I commend you for that. For not playing into the whole, you know, this camera is better, so you should definitely get it.
Yeah. And it's hard because like sometimes I want to like voice my opinion on a camera, but like, like don't. Yeah. I just try to restrain as much as possible.
Well, I mean, I think it's, as long as you preface it or give some sort of disclaimer that this camera is not going to get you more jobs, this camera is not going to automatically make your work better. If you don't know how to use it properly, if you don't know how to take advantage of the 16-bit RAW out, you're not going to become better. Personally, I've early in my career, I got a really good job at an agency where they had a Red Dragon. And because of my lack of experience, my lack of kind of know-how and lighting and much of that stuff, I produced terrible stuff, some good stuff, but terrible stuff that I've seen. And I'm like, why is this so bad? You know, like six at that time, 6K was not a, it was like pretty big. And
it
so
still should be a big deal, 6K. But I mean, people
at that time,
totally, man. Yeah, it's also like a it takes time to develop a certain taste, and you don't have that right away. And like if you don't have that, just having the camera, it's just like you're not gonna make like specific things. But then over time, you start to develop like a taste for what looks good, and like you just like kind of find your angles and all kinds of I get this like, so there's like one question I get like at least once a day, and it's like my least favorite question in the world is people will message me and they know I have the Canon C200, and they're like, is the Canon C200 still good in 2020? Like, like, dude, it's been like 2 years since this camera came out. Like, what has changed about the camera? Yeah. Nothing. Like
same thing.
Yeah, it's like the same camera, like just because it's 2020. I don't know, people just like want to get distracted so they don't have to like take the time to learn something that's actually going to help them, because it's not as sexy to learn about contrast ratios, you know?
Right. I think that people just getting overly dramatic over the things that really don't matter.
Yeah,
but like you said, it's your channel. This is why I commend you. Your channel would grow so much faster if you do talk about cameras.
I know.
If you
do, that's the rock and the hard place situation,
right? And so, like for example, one of the, as I'm trying to figure out if I am going to do the whole YouTube thing with my own personal channel, what is that going to look like? So each video is me kind of experimenting on a workflow that'll work for me.
Right.
One of the early ones that I did was, you know, the A7S III when it came out. And I'm not talking about the specs, because there's a ton of, I mentioned them, but that's not what the video is about. The video is about just me and switching over my way of shooting and what I'm going to start doing from the FS7 to the A7S III, and why I'm going to do that as a freelancer, and why that works for me. And to me, I think that's, I guess, yeah, more valuable.
That's way more valuable. Yeah.
Than, sure. yeah, and getting so stuck on a camera. Yeah,
right.
You know, and, you know, I give my reasons why the AF-S7 was good for me, but it's, you know, if I want to do my own passion projects and whatnot, what the A7S is going to offer me. And one of the yeah. biggest things that I always say is, this is my way of shooting, you know? And it's funny because I just did an episode and I recorded it with Evan Borsier. Great DP. Like, he's yeah, phenomenal. Yeah. I like his work.
I've been following him for a while. I feel like I don't yeah. even like know why I follow him.
Yeah.
I just like ended up like, did he used to do like a YouTube stuff like all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. He did. He had a podcast called the Super Secret Film Cast. And, yeah. nice. Yeah. And he's
like a big CrossFit guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a big CrossFit guy.
Yeah. Dude. Always keeping up with his workouts on Instagram.
Yeah, dude, but really good at, you know, his work and whatnot. Right. We had a whole conversation on, you know, the differences between shooting with the full-on cinema camera and, like, me on this side now looking to just go straight SLR, mirrorless, you know, and the pros and cons and whatnot. And we're going, like, back and forth, not talking right. about any specific camera, but, like, what different cameras offer us. You know, and with our work. And we basically stating our own opinions with right. relative to our own work. You know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the work that you want to do yeah. and the work that you're getting paid to do, because there's very different things.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. you know, if what's bringing the money, if you need a certain camera for what's bringing the money, then that looks like what you're going with. Like, I would have loved to have the Ursa Mini G2 just because of the features and whatnot that it brings, but my clients aren't going to pay me for that camera specifically. They are yeah. paying me specifically for the FS7.
Yeah.
So, which is why, you know, yeah. I buy
it. Mini is also just like a weird shape. I like, wish they would just like compact it a little bit. Just like, all right, yeah. that's just me. Just me being camera privileged in 2020. This is like the thing, like
That's so funny. I love that term, camera privilege. Yeah,
all these cameras are just like so good. Like, people just like need something to complain about.
Yeah, you'll always, if you find it, you'll always find something to complain about with every single camera. I think
they all look the same.
I know. I pre-ordered the A7S III. When that comes in, that's going to be my sixth camera that I own. Camera privilege. I love that term, dude. Yeah. I'm going to keep using
that. I think it just came out of my mouth in this this area. I don't even know if I've said that before.
Dude, I think so. I'm going to have fun editing this episode. Where can people find your work and all that stuff?
Yeah, just my name, Danny Gewirtz, on everything. My website is DannyGewirtz.com. Danny Gewirtz on Instagram, Danny Gewirtz on YouTube. Don't look me up on Twitter. I'm starting to get like people like hit me up on Twitter. I'm like, this is like my safe space, like where I can just like be like a weird, like my own human being, where I have like 100 followers and all of a sudden like everyone's finding me there. It's like not even like, I never talk about like camera stuff or anything.
That's funny.
Now everyone's gonna go to my Twitter. So
yeah. What is it? Danny Gewirtz. You want to spell that out?
Danny, DANNY, then Gewirtz, GEVIRTZ. It's a hard one to spell. Still gets spelled wrong on call sheets, which is my biggest pet peeve in life. So
really? Wow, man. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge appreciate all the content that you're putting out on YouTube.
We're friends for life because of this conversation.
We connected so much.
Just I always think it's like such a fascinating thing, like someone you never met or like know, and you just like, just a really normal thing to just like hop on and like chat for like 2 hours, like the camera stuff, and like now like I'll know you for the rest of my life. So
that's gonna be awesome for sure. I want to have you back.
Yeah, of course, man. I'll come back whenever you want me.
Awesome, man. Thanks for coming on.
As long as people listening don't think I'm a, I don't know, like a douche or something.
We're definitely all over the place with this episode, but it'll be a cool one. It'll be a good one.
Don't even edit it. Just put it up. Just like, just be like, hey guys, here it is.
Oh man. All right, dude. Thanks for so much for coming on. And
of course, man.
I'll see you on the next one, bud.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Danny Gewirtz. I apologize for mispronouncing it on the intro, but I hope you enjoyed this episode. Danny was awesome to talk to, and we're definitely going to have him back. I'll be putting links to everything he mentioned, his film Bad Mama, and also all his contact details in the show notes for this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. This one was a lot of fun. I know we did get into some football talk and all that stuff, but I definitely enjoyed my conversation with Danny. And again, those links are down below. If you enjoyed this episode, the best compliment you can give us is to share it with somebody. And also over on iTunes, go ahead and give us a 5-star review. We definitely appreciate it. And your feedback is always appreciated. Reach out to me. You can reach out to me personally. I am at Ariel Martinez Films over on Instagram. You could also follow at iFilmmaker Podcast, and I will also respond to you there. But the fastest way is to just go on Instagram, on my personal one, at Ariel Martinez Films, and reach out there. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast.